Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack fiction without the friction. I'm the author of Cain and Abel. I was going to have a quote that I got from Jane Eyre, but now I didn't have it up. But it is a Buildings Roman I just learned about. That's an academic term. It's a coming-of-age story based on the Cain and Abel story from the Bible. But you can check that out on Amazon if you want to see it. What do you do? What
do
you bring to the table?
I have some short fiction available on Montos.com. And we are also now creating geeky musical things as Manic Pixie on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, boy.
Whatever that's about.
Trying to make that as uncomfortable as possible.
Thanks.
To make sure people know that that's not our vibe. That's not our... I describe us as a nerdy, artsy band because we're trying to grow ourselves as musicians and try to find, like, our unique
sound. Try to find our sound, so...
And we're in that kind of alpha stage right now. But we do have things that we like, be it nerdy things that we write about in our lyrics or certain bands that we like that we want to infuse our band sound with. So we're excited that we're on the beginnings of this
on
journey.
On the YouTubes.
Yes. And you can find Melissa at Mom Toast on the Tube Source. Hey. But today, we are talking about Warehouse 13.
Woohoo!
I gotta give Melissa all the credit for this because my friend Matt, shout out to Matt Snipes, he's working on a comic on Instagram called Antiviral. He watched Warehouse 13 and Eureka when they first came out on Sci-Fi and was trying to get me to watch it. And I'm just like, listen, my dad has watched the Sci-Fi channel since I was like 2 years old. And ain't nothing good coming out of that. Because I knew it as the place where you could watch cheesy old sci-fi things or really low-budget, cringeworthy things that were, like, hearkening back to that stuff. And so hearing that they were doing original shows, I just kind of assumed, and I know, like, the popularity of After Sharknado, the popularity of the Asylum studio has now become, like, oh, they're doing... They're like tongue in cheek now. Like they get who they are now as a studio, and so they're making a lot of what they call mockbusters that are trying to be self aware about how cheesy some of the stuff is. But none of it was really appealing to me, and so I just kind of looked the other way. But then Melissa was like, "Hey, let's watch Warehouse 13." Like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And then I really liked it.
We got sucked in,
and I was like, that's the thing is that. That was kind of the bridge that I had to go over. I think I found out that it's called the Donet. It's like that thing. It's a French term for like that thing that you have to get past in order to like something.
Oh,
and so
it's one of those acquired taste sorts of
right.
things.
So like for our mom, she grew up with the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings cartoons. That they are very strange. Like cartoon musicals that tried their darndest to translate the stuff and it just didn't work for her. And then she saw the movies and she was like, wait a minute. This is what that.
I understand it now. That's what that was going about.
That's what all that was about. Yeah. Like, and so she got it. And so that was what it was like for me, like watching this thing. I kind of expected it to kind of be like Doctor Who, where like I appreciate where their heart is, but I don't necessarily respond to it very well. But the first thing that I'll compliment it with is that I like the just the premise to start off with. You have this team starting off with Artie is this handler guy who contacts Micah and Peter, who are both Secret Service agents, and says, like, we have a new special assignment for you guys. And they find out that there's this warehouse that houses all of these mystic and super powerful artifacts. And so rather than fighting bad guys, as like per the like Supernatural or like Scooby-Doo type setup that a lot of these sci-fi fantasy shows procedurals go off of. It's more like, no, we're going to find the artifact and get it back here. Bag it, zip it, bag it,
grab it, bag it, tag it.
Yeah. So that alone as a setup is cool because you get to explore all these interesting...
Snag it, bag it, and tag it. They're all eggs. Snag it, bag it, and tag it.
Yeah. Rather than exploring... Or rather than just having, like, the monster of the week that you get, like, with, like, Fringe or like I said, like, Supernatural. It's more like, okay, there's this artifact that's causing some kind of problem. And it's safe in the warehouse. So let's go tackle whatever thing. So it can be somebody that's manipulating other people with an artifact. They could be actively, like, you know, people are dying right. because of an artifact.
They could have been tricked by the artifact. Like, sometimes they don't even know they're using it.
Somebody might be getting sick because of an artifact. And so it really allows them to set up a lot of different types of drama based on whatever artifact they're going after. But also, like, you get that the people creating the show really love history and that they love all the, like, exploring the different cultures of behind the artifact. And later on, you start getting stuff like with, you know, they're doing, like, tributes to different types of storytelling. So you get noir, there's, like, a detective thing where Micah gets to go inside the book of, you know, one of her favorite authors, and she finds out that he's hiding in there, and she's trying to talk him out of, you know, just staying in this fantasy world and everything. You get, like, a telenovela thing.
That's hilarious. They're
stuck in this old lady, this old abuela's favorite telenovela, and they all automatically start speaking Spanish, and they're all different like tropes within, like, you know, Artie turns into this lovesick, you know, old guy,
generalissimo,
and you know, Micah is this like hot maid that's like, you know, the hussy of the show, and that the wife is like constantly, like, trying to, you know, get out of her, you know, house and stuff.
Also impressive walking by a pregnant woman in some very high heels.
Yeah, and they had set up a character that earlier on in skills. The show that comes back, and Pete's all like, did I get you pregnant? No? Okay,
nope,
good.
Nope, not me.
Because, yeah, he was going out with her. And it just seemed like she, whether it was her idea or whether it was, like, a writer's idea to do this tribute thing, somebody called her and she was just like, yes, no, it doesn't matter that I'm pregnant. I want to get
fine.
Back on the show.
I don't care if I'm almost pregnant. I will wear those heels. Not a problem.
So that a lot of that was really sweet. Like, whether it's coming from this, the affinity for different types of, also within the noir episode, you also get like a 70s car chase movie.
Yeah.
Because somebody's in this like haunted muscle car that's like, they're using it to go through walls. And so there's a lot of really inventive storytelling ideas. Do you have any specific things that are like favorites?
I don't know. I like them all. I like the like conspiracy theory vibes you get from a lot of the stuff where it's like, cause like the warehouse is a totally new kind of conspiracy theory. Like it wasn't a typical troped one.
Right.
Where like, oh, they just has all these like really cool historical items. Like, it was a fun thing to latch onto, but they run into other clandestine organizations. Like, they run into the Templars, or they run into, you know, those priests in the Vatican that are like hiding stuff, or like whatever. There's like a whole bunch of other groups that they happen to have ties with because they know about all these things.
Right. And they built up this lore that the 13th warehouse is like, there's been other ones.
Right.
And so this thing has been around for, that's another cool lore thing. Is that they set up that it's not just Artie is like a G-man,
right?
And they're working for the government. They set up that there's these things called regents,
right? So it's bigger than that.
His boss is Mrs. Fredericks, and she is one of these regent people.
Well, she's the caretaker for Warehouse 13,
right? She's very special in that she's not just another one of the people. And so the regents are kind of like You don't know if they're like angels or demigods or something. But these regents have been around since like the dawn of time, and they've been keeping these objects safe and out of their own hands, basically. And so this is the 13th warehouse. And that's one of the things I remember reading. Dennis O'Neill wrote a book on how to write comics, and he was talking about Magnum P.I., and he said, like, I remember loving that show. I couldn't tell you any plot of any one of the episodes, but it was just the idea that he loved going on this ride with this character every week and, you know, going on an adventure, basically, with them. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is that you kind of come at the show with loving the characters. I really liked I really like the dynamic between Micah and Pete.
Yeah, a lot. It's adorable.
Yeah, because I'm a sucker for the kind of like opposites attract trope. And it was certainly this idea of Pete is this kind of like man child who is. And what I like about both of them is that they both have kind of tragic backstories. You know that there's a reason why they are the way they are. But it doesn't really bash you over the head in every episode with their like broken toys or something. Like, I think there are certain immature guy characters that are very grating to me, and I don't understand why any woman would put up with that person. And that's the same goes for like that kind of like harpy, overbearing woman character. And so what was interesting is that they set up Pete as like his father was a fireman and he died when he was very young. And so you get the idea that he kind of has this like stunted maturity from that. And then with Micah,
plus he also kind of blames himself because Pete's special thing is he gets these vibes when bad things are going to happen.
Oh, right.
And
right.
got a strong vibe before his dad left, and he wasn't able to stop his dad from going.
Right.
So he felt guilty that his dad died.
Right. And Micah has a very similar thing where she had a partner who she was also in love with. They were in a relationship, and she feels responsible for him dying at the hands of this villain that eventually comes back into the story. But they both kind of handle it their own ways, and they're both very committed to their jobs. But you get to know them and see that they both have this like chemistry that as actors, they both play off each other very well. It's very funny to see them interact with each other. Another thing I appreciated was that it was pretty obvious that they were going to try to set up that they were, you know, going to get together eventually or something like that. But I appreciated the fact that it wasn't this thing where, like, there's a bunch of misunderstandings.
Right.
That get in the way of them getting together.
They were both mature enough and secure enough in who they were that if the other one happened to be going out with somebody, they weren't, like, all hurt or upset about it. They're just like, hey, good for you. You found somebody to be with. Like, even though you could tell through the whole thing that they cared about each other, and they both knew that they cared about each other, they didn't automatically assume, oh, that means we're going to be in a romantic relationship. It's just we're good partners.
Right.
And they don't really realize until towards the very end that, yes, we are good partners. Maybe we should try and make that something else. But that wasn't, like, the whole point of the show, because I know some shows get lost in that, making that the whole point is will they or won't they? And you're like, but then what happens when they do? You have no more show left.
Right.
Like, this is about more than that.
Especially in the last season, I felt like they did a bunch of storylines that forced them to think about whether they could live without the other person.
Right.
And so it forced them actually as characters to get out of this comfort zone that they got in as partners. And it was a very adult thing. Like,
yeah.
The idea that they work together well and that it would be a danger to try to be together. It actually dealt with that as opposed to just throwing kind of monkey wrenches artificially into their relationship.
Which is also why I liked the dynamic between Claudia and Artie.
Yeah, so to set this up, in the first season, there's a hacker character that's trying to get into the warehouse, and you don't really know why. It explains that she has unfinished business.
Right, with Artie.
That's with Artie. But then, slowly but surely, she becomes the fourth member of this team. And
Artie kind of becomes like a surrogate father for her, because she didn't really have a father figure either.
Right.
But Artie also, like, and as with Pete and Micah, Claudia and Artie both have their own issues as well. Artie being the kind of person that always wants to push people away and not let anybody get close, but also has this, like, overwhelming need to make Claudia safe. But then Claudia being this person that kind of doesn't really have her own identity. Like, she was in a mental institution for a while and went through a lot of other things. So she feels like she's just the crazy one. Like, she doesn't have anything past that identifies her. So she's, like, searching for herself as a woman now growing up and trying to, you know, figure out what she is and what her point is and trying to, you know, be able to be responsible for herself. But she's like, but Artie's, like, hanging over me, like, you know. So it was cute because it was obviously something she needed. But then also watching them both mature enough to get past that as well was really nice.
Yeah. And it was interesting that there were some things that they actually flirted with, like, especially with her character, that she was going to take specifically the role that Mrs. Fredericks had had. But, spoiler alert, they get to this point where she starts thinking, like, I don't know necessarily whether that's the best thing for me.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if I want to do that.
What I thought was interesting about that was that with a couple of these different things, it towed this line, especially as we're starting to get into more conversations about what is the role of women, what's the role of, gender roles at all. And I thought it did a good job of dealing with that in a very mature way, where it wasn't like it made in the relationship between Claudia and Artie and with Micah and Pete, it didn't seem like they were just falling into, well, this is your job because you're the man or you're the woman. It did this good. It felt organic.
Yeah.
And so especially with that one, it didn't make it. It wasn't forcing this maternal role onto a character that didn't feel like
that's what she wanted.
And so I thought that was nice that it didn't, even though, like, I would say it's kind of shockingly conservative for a lot of, like, cause, like, I grew up with CSI, the first one. And a lot of those things were about, like, Grissom is this kind of, like, weird dude. And it's like, it seems like it's forcing onto the audience this idea that, like, in Vegas, there's all these kind of, like, these really things creepy, that happen.
Strange things.
Yeah, like, you know, there's a BDSM storyline, and
so it was neat because it was interesting psychological historical things without purposely being shocking. Like, it wasn't about the shock value of, oh, let's see how weird of a way we can kill somebody.
Uh-huh.
It was more of a, let's play around with what would this artifact actually do to a person. So say if you got a hold of a Growlithe Poe's pen, and it's imbued with all this magic because of who Edgar Allan Poe was, what was that do to somebody else? It was a really neat thing to not have that, like, shocking stuff thrown in your face every episode.
Yeah, and I that kind of is a good transition into what the artifacts, how the different artifacts led to different, like,
Well, I wasn't done with the gender role thing, though. Real quick.
Oh, sure.
Because I think they did a lot of fun of still swapping roles that are technically traditionally certain genders, but playing with what that looks like on the other one. So, like, for example, Pete had a sizable ego and was pretty good looking. So, you know, whatever, but whenever they needed to get rid of an annoying woman that was interfering with their case, they would, like, throw Pete at her. Like, go take care of that. So he would just go flirt with the woman and try and get her out of the way, instead of having, you know, traditionally that's the female character would have to go flirt with a guy that to get them to get what they want. It was more Pete usually did that kind of thing.
Right.
Or like with Claudia being a hacker, usually those are portrayed as, like, geeky young men as opposed to the woman.
Right.
So she got to do a lot of stuff that was traditionally like the geek boy thing to do, especially then. This is an older show, so at the time it was very much more of a male thing. She got to do stuff that was different.
Yeah, no, that I mean, that's a good point. And each one of them got to kind of try on different things. And I think that that's an interesting thing for a adult program to do, where a lot of the idea seems to be with a lot of like CSIs or Law and Orders, especially a lot of procedurals in general. Somebody has a character and they don't waver very much, and there's not much growth within the show. And so what's interesting about this one is that there was a lot of emotional maturity, but it didn't get bogged down by like melodramatic stuff. Like, I think that that's one criticism you could put on something like a CSI, where like something randomly drastic will happen. Like, somebody will be the victim of a serial killer, will all of a sudden get obsessed with one of the team members.
Right.
And then they have this whole season arc of, you know, this person after them. But what was interesting about this one was that it was fairly light of a show. It was very funny. Very, like, you can just throw it on and enjoy yourself, like, and have a laugh. But at the same time, like, it has stuff like cancer and, Claudia comes from a foster families, and, Artie is disconnected from his father, stuff like that. And so it did that in such a way where, like, this stuff just happens in an adult's life. There are things that pop up, and they had this support system that was there for them. And so they were able to meet that challenge. And so it didn't, rather than disappearing into this kind of like branded show where like everybody kind of clocks in every day and does their thing. It was more like each one of these characters has this different challenge. And then, or like, they really acted like a family and in helping that person get through that and realize, you know, a strength that they might not have realized that they have. I think it might be good to talk about specifically how it deals with diversity, because it's interesting that even though you could, with some of these like ensemble shows, I think you could say that somebody like Micah and Pete were like the leads of the show, but it did a good job of having each character get like different arcs, different moments to shine.
Even the secondary characters had arcs.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was pretty cool. Like Lena, if you want to bring up Lena.
Yeah, so what I thought was interesting was that, especially because Melissa was specifically watching Fringe around the same time, and I was thinking about, I freaking love the oh, I need to look up his name. What's the guy that plays...
Oh, the conspiracy guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is, but he's awesome.
I'm gonna
call him the conspiracy guy, because if he shows up in a show, you know there's a conspiracy going
on. Yeah, I remember I was watching the Guest. It's this horror movie where this this like veteran comes home from...
Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, it's like war. This kid comes home from war, and he's like a friend of somebody that died. So he goes and visits his family, and it seems like... it might be, like, this honorable, like, gesture on his part. Like, he's like, you know, I was his friend. I want to see if you guys need anything. And then slowly but surely he realizes that he's this psycho that has, like, severe post-traumatic stress. But then Lance Reddick shows up. And you're like, okay, there's something wrong. Like, even before you know anything about this guy... You know, if Lance Reddick shows up, that there's something wrong. There's
some bigger conspiracy going on.
But what
even on Bosch, he's the
oh right,
he's kept it on Bosch. Yeah.
So he's like, very good at authority figures
that are dirty. That,
yeah,
somehow.
So
or involved with more than you know.
Right. What was interesting to me, and I all think put my cards on the table. I didn't necessarily watch Fringe religiously, but it seemed like he was just kind of that stock character. There were a lot of other characters that had much more to do within that show than him specifically.
They eventually kind of gave him more when they started doing the alternate universe stuff. His alternate universe character had a lot more going on than his actual.
And that was an interesting thing about that show is that I felt like they understood later on, hey, we haven't had this actor do much, so let's give him something to do because there's an alternate version of them.
So, you know.
But with this one, what I thought was nice was that Mrs. Fredericks had this air of authority. She's played by, dang it.
I can't remember anybody's name. So many of these people's names. She was awesome.
Yeah, so she, her and Lena are both African-American, and they're ancillary in the sense that they're not part of the core team. But what I thought was interesting was that even though she is the Artie's boss, and she doesn't often deal directly with the, like, the field team, CCH Pounder. How could you forget that name?
Yeah, really. I'm never going to forget it.
Janelle Williams played Lena. CCH Pounder's character was this character who is kind of working with the Regents, mainly. But there's this air of mystery around her and this kind of authority that she has throughout the show that's blended with this kind of maternal aspect of her character. What I thought was funny is that she wears, like, this really, like, matronly...
Yeah, it's almost like, not really 40s, maybe like 50s. Like, 50s mom, but not like... That's not going to give the right impression.
Like, I don't know what to call
like,
it.
Like, almost old lady clothes.
Yeah, and then she has, like, this beehive hairdo.
Right, and like, stuff. Pearls and, like, a little
but what's so funny
gloves,
is that
like,
they
the whole
don't...
nine yards.
She doesn't have this, like, fairy godmother type thing.
No.
She's very
serious.
Competent at what she does. She's very powerful in some way that you.
Because she just randomly appears and disappears when she feels like it.
Yeah, but it's she's such a fun character throughout the show, and you find out eventually that she has this connection to the warehouse, that she is the caretaker of it, and she does a lot to force the main characters to have different perspectives, have different. And she really gets a lot out of these other characters and gets to grow herself where she is losing her connection to the warehouse and gets to have this kind of like this arc of like sacrifice.
Right.
And where you see that what she's doing has this massive cost
right.
to her personally.
And she was willing to do that. And that was something nice with Lena too, because Lena again, is like a very secondary, but also kind of motherly character. Like she emotionally cares for the crew, and she makes them cookies and stuff.
And
like
there are sometimes
she runs the place they live in.
Specifically with Artie, she
right.
confronts him in ways that
other people couldn't.
No,
but then she also has to do a great sacrifice for the thing. Mm. But you realize she knew that going into it. Like this was things that they made a choice to do this job, knowing it could cost them everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the time to pay off those feelings, not to just say, oh, well, you know, that's how she would have wanted it or whatever, but they actually give you a really good emotional payoff for those characters' sacrifices.
Right. Yeah. So I think we're going to take a quick break for our ads, and then after the bump, we'll talk more about Warehouse 13.
Woo!
So I think we kind of have to cut off whenever it's getting close to the 30-minute mark. But I wanted to wrap up the diversity talk because I think it kind of came up during our recent discussion. If you haven't heard our live show from Wizard World Philadelphia, we talked about the
Dark Phoenix
saga. And I had brought up how Storm and a number of the X-Men, but they kind of mentioned her race specifically within that, and it's why I kind of said that she's an archetypal character among friendly races, because everybody's like, you're pretty and black, and that's something, man.
And that's news.
It's like weird. Yeah. So, but it was kind of like their ham-fisted attempt to talk about like race and have a different character within the story, and because it's a guy, he's just going to be like, she's like, when she comes in a room, everybody's like, oh, mackerel. But and that was their way of saying, like, this character is special. But what what I liked in this was that these characters had something to do.
Yeah.
They weren't just window dressing, though, in this series. And it even deals with, like, the fact that Artie is ethnically Jewish. And when it comes time to do a Christmas episode, they, like, talk about that. Right. They reference it. Same goes for, there's a character that comes in later in the show named Steve, who is a ATF agent.
Yeah.
And he is gay.
And a Buddhist.
And a Buddhist, right. And so, and he also has this thing where he can detect if you're lying.
Yes.
And so what's interesting about his character was that Claudia and him became friends very quickly. And it makes sense because he lost his sister.
Right.
And she regained her brother, but then he went off to do this research. And so it's interesting because they have this very sibling relationship. It's not just like that gay best friend trope.
No, it's much more brother-sisterly.
Right. and like they play around with the fact that they're both young people and that they joke about relationships and stuff like that. And it feels like off screen they have fun
together doing
gossiping and stuff like that. But it doesn't bash you over the head with this character's sexuality. It comes up very seldom within the show. And it's very organic to the Warehouse 13 cast. Like, I'll give them credit for that, like, each one of the characters that they introduce into the team, there is another actress that comes in. I don't know her name, but who's Asian American, who is a therapist.
Oh, yeah.
And she comes in and is seems like very organically, you know, part of the team and works well with the different actors and things like that. And you can't say that about many shows where, like, people randomly pop in.
Yeah, and everything's seems like still, yeah.
It's natural that they're part of this thing. I wanted to also compliment the special effects.
Oh, yeah.
Within the show.
Because this show, I don't know if they started with less of a budget than they ended, because it seems like they got more post-production effects the later they went.
Mm-hmm.
But for something that was stuck on, that was not stuck on, but had to rely on practical effects for the beginning, they did some really good practical effects.
And I think you might be, I don't want to say you're wrong, but like, I think what you're saying is like, even if it was like something that they add in post or something that is like CGI.
Right.
Because they have less of a budget, they can only do that so much. And so it's such a seamless blend. Like, they did this balance of, we have this CG thing. Let's not just throw something up there that could look really bad and rely on this as, like, there's going to be a big dragon here. Let's just put it all in there. Like, they did this good, like, for example, there's, like, a giant monkey or something that comes out of a box.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was this really cool thing where it shows the box and it shows it, like, shaking. And then you get a split second of a something fist coming out of the thing. And it was such a good, like, because it harkens back to those old sci-fi shows where they're relying on the tension of, like, they're relying on suspense.
Right. I think that's better storytelling anyway, because we love stuff like Hitchcock, where they never really show you a lot of the scariness.
Right.
They leave that up to your imagination, and they just give you enough to freak out yourself on.
Right.
So, like, that was actually a gargoyle, right? So they had a gargoyle in a box.
Oh, right.
And you see the hand bust through. You see them running away from the thing. You see it doing things.
And there's a shadow over them.
So you get to imagine this gargoyle probably way better than they could have done it in CGI at the time. Right. You see flashes of it, and you see it fall apart after. Right. Like, you see
That was such a cool scene because, like, they made it feel like there's this big, heavy thing. And the minute that it goes, that they turn it back into a stone gargoyle, the effect was very well accomplished. So that's the thing, is that it balanced well this idea of, like, if we use these things sparingly, and a lot of the artifacts that they come into contact with aren't, like, you know, King Arthur's sword or something, where a lot of it's relying on, like, big action set pieces or something. A lot of them are very psychological.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, there's one artifact they get that is about something it's tied to, like, anarchy. So, like, there's this thing of they put the...
Oh, is that the spray paint?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's what it is. They put the Anarchy A that you might be aware of, was a big part of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is it starts dissolving the building. And so you see that there's like cracks along the building, and it's a really well done effect. But the idea of the energy of this object being something that is like, that's going to, you know, destroy this thing. It's interesting to then get the solution to be, he makes a peace sign
over it.
And like those things were like, there's something that's driving people crazy, or there's something that's making somebody sick. And so you get these artifacts where like somebody's just lying up at a hospital,
right?
And you see them like withering away or something. So they have like, I was going to also compliment their makeup department.
Because oh yeah, very much. They did really an good amazing job.
Makeup done. And like, for example, there's a whole episode where there's, these like models that are aging really quickly. And so it was really like well done to where like it looks like them older.
Right.
It wasn't just like they slapped rubber on their faces.
No, it just really, they did a good job.
So I liked that the conflict came from these kind of, historical based things. Oh, probably the biggest, like, fan servicey thing that they did was that they made H.G. Wells this kind of like ass kicking
woman.
You know, woman. Like, they set up that it was her brother, that right. like the H.G. Wells that we know. Like, no, that was really my brother. I wrote all of his books and made all of the inventions and stuff from his stories. And so it was, but what I enjoyed about it was that it wasn't just like, let's put in this like sex symbol thing and make it about the fact that this character that we all know and love is now this attractive woman. It gave her a character. Yeah. She was a person within the show. And it does that a couple times with different, like, I guess you'd call it like stunt casting. Like they had, that's kind of like a Hollywood.
They had like all the tons of people from other sci-fi shows.
Right. So
on there.
So Brent Spiner shows up.
The guys from Firefly have an episode. It's, I don't know their names either. That's terrible. I should know their names.
Well,
I know
what are their character names?
It's, slipping my mind. Kaylee and the doctor
guy. Oh, yeah. So Jewel State,
I think is her name. And then I forget his name, which is bad. I'm sorry. Don't hate me because I love Firefly.
If you are listening, dear Firefly doctor character, you did a great job. We love you
a lot. We're sorry we're terrible with names. Who else is in there? There's a bunch of people. Rene Albert, I can remember his name, but I can't pronounce it, from Deep Space Nine.
What's the captain from?
Oh, Janeway.
Yeah.
That's not her name either. Kate Mulgrew. Yeah. There you go.
Hey.
Oh,
and I think Carrie Fisher had something to do with the show. I forget. Really? It said that she might have been like an executive producer or something.
We love you, Space Mom.
It was just funny because I remember that it was an episode where Kate Mulgrew was on. And so I was just like, look at all these sci-fi women getting on this show.
Yeah.
It was just a cool, like, thing. But yeah, like, I liked that when they had them on, they were meaty roles. Like, for her, she was Pete's mom.
Right.
Captain Janeway. And so there was this arc with
and
them.
And a regent.
Oh, right.
Because he was all like, wait, mom? What?
And then Brent Spiner was this kind of like, gray, morally gray villain. You weren't sure which way he was going to go. Oh, the guy that was Spike in Buffy.
Oh,
was also in there as this count that has that's immortal.
Right.
He was so good as like this really like he's super intelligent, but very like
sick of life,
full of himself, and what was funny was that his
when
wife.
When they first find him, he's like drunk out of his mind.
Yeah. That was so funny to me because it was
sitting
just
at
like
his desk in his
I
office.
Thought he was just going to be there for that scene,
right?
Like they were going to get information out of him, but then they find out who he is, and his wife is also immortal, And so they have this fun dynamic of, like, he's constantly, like, chasing women. And I like the fact that, like, it deals with them as a family union.
Right.
Unit. And you find out that he has, that they have a son. And so they both do what's best for him. But you get the idea that they still don't like each other. And that, like, maybe they put up with each other because they've gone through
so much,
all this stuff together. But really, like, they could just as well break up the minute that they get right out of the show. I thought that was good. I think that one thing that I'm learning from doing this podcast together is that there are plenty of things where, based on your experience with similar programs, you can start seeing, like, patterns. Like, so I, procedurals, I'm kind of getting tired of them. And, like, these different cable networks that have original shows, like, the first 10 that they try may not be the best. And I know certainly, like, with stuff like they're doing Krypton now, there's something with doing original programs where there's just some of them that don't catch my attention. But I think what this showed me was not to just write off something just because you see it as, oh, I've seen things like that before.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to be into it. At least give it a shot.
Right.
Because
I'm surprised you. Like, I was not expecting, I don't know if you guys have seen the show Limitless, not the movie.
Oh.
Because I really wasn't that huge of a fan of the movie, actually.
Excuse me. Yeah.
But I started watching the show thinking, maybe if it's a longer show, they can get more development into it. But it was a different character entirely that you're following. And it was so much more funny.
Uh-huh.
And just so much lighter. Like, it had the same tone, kind of, as Warehouse 13, where it's light, but there are serious things that happen and stuff.
Right. Yeah, I saw a few episodes of that, and it struck me just how creative the writing of it was.
And I wasn't expecting that. It was nice. Yeah. So, you know, give a show a chance.
Mm-hmm. And especially with, like, being a nerd and knowing that a lot of these genre things, like, we can sometimes feel like there are people playing in our playground. And, like, what? Get off my lawn. Like, I'm, like, especially as somebody who is an avid reader, I can write off anything that's doing this in the TV medium and especially, like, they call this the golden age of television, right? And so I'm watching things like Breaking Bad that are, you know, super gritty and there's this vein of realism in there, even if it is, like, a crime fiction show. But because of how much content there is, there's bound to be somebody out there that's doing something new in a playground that you might have played in before, and right, you're just like, oh, they're doing this differently.
Right.
Because I could say the same thing about Lost. Like, going into that, I had no clue what the show was about. I just knew people on an island. I knew J.J. Abrams was involved, but it's one of my favorite shows of all time, and that show did so many things differently.
Yeah.
I was going to reveal one of them, but like there's just certain things that you see them do, and you're just like, how, like, I would never have expected that. That's what this did. It did that, like, kind of Ghostbusters, Monster of the Week thing in a way that, like, completely threw it on its head and was able to make it more about the characters than about the procedural angle of, like, their detectives with chakras or like, because so many of them, like I'm reading through the Dresden Files right now, and at the beginning of the series, at least, it is very much reliant on a lot of noir tropes.
Right.
So reading it, at least, you know, going into it, that that's what he's trying to do.
Right.
It's very self-aware in that way, is that, like, you're not trying to reinvent the wheel necessarily.
Like, this is a noir detective. He just happens to also have magic.
Right. And so,
and go.
Being used to that, I thought that was going to be what this was. But I feel like the people involved really brought it to a level of, like, one cute thing is that in the interstitials between the commercials,
oh, yeah,
they do this fun thing where there's, like, a warehouse door, and so whenever they exit a scene, like, it's about to go to commercial, they do this thing where, like, the door slams shut and it says Warehouse 13,
right,
or like one of the boxes in the warehouse
closes, or like they're on a Farnsworth screen, Farnsworth, so they're communicator things.
Oh yeah, so let's before we close the show, let's list some of the random fun things that we like from
Farnsworth. Were awesome. I want to make myself one.
So yeah, they have communicators basically.
Two-way FaceTime things, which I mean, now we can do that on phones, but you couldn't then. It's the coolest thing ever.
And I really liked that they called them Teslas, that were kind of like 38 specials, but they were would shock you. And so I thought it was cute because it was like it was a fun way to
make it non-lethal.
Yeah, like you get because they're set up this world where not everyone they're chasing is like. This psychopath. Like,
right. It's
like,
not always that they're villains. They're just being overtaken by these. They called it whammied.
Yeah.
Whammied by an artifact.
And that gets to another fun thing is that one of the ways that they can sometimes neutralize the magic of an item is that they have these like kind of Ziploc silver bags.
Yeah.
They have purple goo in them.
Right.
And so they can just drop it in there and something, like it'll shoot like sparks out of the bag. And they're like, okay. But then. What that's kind of set up is that some of them are so, the magic is so strong, or you can call it magic, the energy, whatever, however they say it, is so strong that it can't be neutralized by this stuff.
Right, so they have to dump it in a bucket of it, or they have to literally, like, get it back to the warehouse.
Mm-hmm. But it's very, like, Ghostbuster-y.
Yeah.
Like, it sets up stuff where, like, randomly, like, they'll have to, like, there was something wrong with the scaffolding in that warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
And so and it was at, like, it was so far up. That they had to shoot like a goo RPG at it. And so Claudia does it and she gets like covered.
They were all over goo. What else did I like? The Teslas were cool. The whole thing had a steampunk vibe. And then you learn later it's because Artie did that on purpose in the warehouse. Like he wanted it to look like
a steampunk vibe. Yeah, that was such a weird.
I was like, oh, that's so cute. Like it was an intentional thing. It didn't just like organically become this.
Right, anyway. It wasn't just by virtue of the fact that this is the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right.
And we want to appeal to nerds.
No.
Like, they ended up making it a self-aware thing. Where it's like, yeah, I like it. I'm
trying to think of the Alice mirror came up a lot. That was a fun artifact where it's, you know, crazy version of Alice Little stuck in a mirror because she's psycho and they wanted to keep her in there. I don't know. Did you have any favorite artifacts? I'm trying to think of what some of my favorites were.
I thought it was cool that they had Harriet Tubman's symbol could make shapeshift.
Yeah.
So that was a fun, like, and it's such a fun thing because it, like, there can be little tributes to certain, like, figures in history. And so it's still, like, this fun show, like, they don't, you know, whenever they say Harriet Tubman's name, they don't have, like, a moment of silence or something.
Right.
But it's, like, a cute way of paying some homage to figures like that in history without making it dry. Like, it's something that they can use for good.
Right.
And it says, like, this person was such a significant person that their energy transferred into this object, and now they're memorialized as that. So that was one that came up multiple times because different characters
would
use it to try to shapeshift.
I liked that Artie got around the warehouse on a Segway. Like, he had that little Segway he went around on, and everybody else was, like, jogging after him.
Right.
It's like, you're on wheels, wait up!
I thought it was funny that when they, there are two, one is kind of serious and one is a little more fun. They had the disco ball from Studio 70, I don't know what number it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that famous like disco studio, and so like it turned Micah into this like disco vixen chick, and that was one funny thing is that they randomly had different characters act so out of character, and so but one thing I wanted to say is that I liked like Eddie McClintock played Pete, Joanne Kelly played Micah, Allison Scagliotti.
Yeah, played Claudia.
Why
is she not in other things? She needs to be in more things. You guys should hire her, like, now. She's awesome.
Saul Rubinek played Artie. And as we mentioned, Janelle Williams and CCH Founder played Lena and Mrs. Irene Frederick. And I've seen Erin Ashmore in a lot of stuff. he's kind of a reliable, like, character actor.
Is that, what's his name?
Iceman.
That was Steve.
Thankfully, he was able to do, Aaron Eckhart played Steve. The acting in this show is such that when they can rely on them to get emotional, believably, they could rely on them to be, have really good, any one of them had really good,
good fun
comedic timing, and they really, they felt like every day they came in to play the game. Like, they all felt like they really were passionate about the show.
Yeah.
They really cared about each other. Like, towards the end, when they have, like, all their, like, tearful goodbyes, I'm just like, they probably really are sad that this is over. And that's a sad thing is that the fifth season was, like, just 5 episodes. But I thought they did a good job of wrapping it up. Tell everybody what your experience was like.
Oh.
When you first watched
it. So when I first watched this show, I'm not sure if it's because, I don't know what happened, how I thought that this was the ending, but I watched an episode. You get to a point where,
well, I'll say that was another artifact I was going to bring up. They have the Pandora's box.
Right.
And so they open Pandora's box.
No, well, there's something happens to the warehouse and Pandora's box is destroyed. And so the world loses hope because the only thing left in Pandora's box is hope.
Very good.
So they destroy hope and the world goes crazy. Uh-huh. So then Artie
and then
goes.
A character dies.
Right.
And so you
Artie's like, nope, this is not happening. And he goes and gets this thing that rewinds time so that it doesn't happen. Because he rewinds time, he is then tortured by this foul villain that he thinks is trying to get him to mess things up again. But it really is all of his head. But it talks him into getting this blue orchid. I forget what it was called. But anyway, it was this plague orchid that they had in this, like, indestructible thing that if you release this plague orchid, then the entire, like, half the world dies.
Mm-hmm.
So he manages to get into this, you know, impervious container, releases the orchid,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I stopped watching. Like, I thought that was the end. And I'm like, because I heard they got canceled or something. Like, I don't know what happened. I somehow thought that that was the ending of the show. And I'm like, how can you end it like that? That is just the most depressing thing on the face of the earth. Thankfully, that is not the ending of the show.
I don't want to be mean, but it is, it's just in retrospect, and it's just so hilarious that what if they had just ended it there?
That would have been just, well, I'm like,
that would have been
what?
Insanely sad.
It would have been like the most depressing ever ending ever. Like, I'm like, right. I thought this was a happy light show and you end it with this?
Because there's like, for example, I think there's a rumor where, for the Tom and Jerry, the last Tom and Jerry cartoon, they did this thing where, like, Tom and Jerry just sit in a train track and wait to get hit. And, like, there's rumors like that with certain, like, cartoons where they, like, draw something to be funny where it's like, we're getting canceled. Let's draw something really horrible. But, like, that sounds to me like something like that where they're, like, so sad that it's ending.
It was like, fine, cancel us, we'll show you. And then it ended on this
then
note.
They do this rogue production of, like, a horrible... horrible.
But anyway,
ending.
I'm very happy that that was not the ending, and there was like a whole season and a half after that.
Yeah.
But it was just sad to me that I was like, no, you can't do this. What's going on?
So the moral of the story is try things.
The moral of the story is thank you, Netflix / Amazon Prime / whoever you are that has whole shows up that you can watch.
It's IMDb
because
Free Dive.
Whatever, whichever one we watched it on. Because I was trying to catch it on, like, the sci-fi website or something because I didn't have the sci-fi channel at the time.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah, I would actually make a point of that because IMDb Free Dive is a new app that's available on the, I think within the past year it's a new, on the Amazon Fire Stick. And they have free shows, and that's one of them that the complete run is of. So that's how we saw it. If you have that capability.
They also have some good movies and stuff that I haven't seen in forever. I watched The NeverEnding Story. So much fun. Haven't seen that in a long time.
So what I was going to say is the moral of the story is try something new. You might like it. And if you are watching something and you assume something is the end of the story, maybe do a little bit more research. Because, I'm glad that we got to finish it together. I thought it was cool that, you know, you wanted to watch it, and we just
And then I'm like, oh, good, that wasn't the end.
Yeah.
Keep watching the show.
We got to finish the show.
Because I kept warning him. I'm like, you're going to hate the ending. You're going to hate the ending because I thought that was the ending. It's like, nope.
No. Fortunately, they didn't crush everybody's dreams.
They did not crush my dreams. Well, they crushed it at the time.
Yeah. I would not have wanted to meet you within the week after that.
I would have been so sad.
So if you want to talk to us about Warehouse 13 or any other thing that is related to the world of literature and movies and books and storytelling of any kind.
Yes.
Please, what are you doing?
Write us at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook at Unboxing Story.
At Unboxing Story.
I'm Mom Toast Mel on Twitter.
And I am a John Matos writer at most places.
I am very active on Twitter. I love my Twitters. My work is boring. Please tweet me.
And you can also leave us at the Anchor.
Yes,
at
if you go to anchor.fm/unboxingstory, you can leave us a message.
Yes. I think it's a unboxing dash story, not in our control. But yeah, if you just look at Unboxing Story on your apps, you should be able to see us.
Please rate and review us on iTunes so other people can find us too.
Yes.
Because apparently you need to hit some magic number of ratings for iTunes to care that you exist. So please.
Please help us trick the algorithm.
Yes.
Into thinking that we are.
Together.
I don't know what category we're on in there.
I don't know either.
It's just funny because every now and I hear a podcast say, you know, we're on the top comedy things. Or whatever. We have fun here, but I don't want to make it sound like
we're... Do they have an arts one? Maybe we're under arts.
I maybe literary arts? Who knows?
I don't know.
Whatever charts
try and find us.
Get us on all...
Let us know if you can find us.
Tell your grandma.
Tell
your cousin. Tell the brother-in-law that you don't talk to. You know you need to talk to him.
Call your mother. What's wrong with you?
All right. We had a lot of fun with this one. If there's any other sci-fi shows you want to recommend, let us know in any of those places that we just mentioned. It's been fun, y'all. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.